Periodically, when I pull out my iPhone and you see me on my iPhone during Mass, I always want to clarify, don't be scandalized. I'm not playing games. Okay, my Bible is in here. Okay, so I use it. Okay. I want to repeat the gospel today. Because I want you to listen to the gospel with fresh ears and take it seriously. Not that we don't, but listen to it. Listen to it. Jesus says to his disciples, I have come to set the earth on fire. And how I wish it were already blazing. There is a baptism with which I must be baptized. And how great is my anguish until it is accomplished. Do you think that I have come to establish peace on earth? No. I tell you, rather, division. From now on, a household of five will be divided. Three against two, and two against three. A father will be divided against his son. A son against his father. A mother against her daughter. A daughter against her mother. A mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law. A daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. This is one of the toughest gospels. And it is a tough gospel that is important for us to keep in mind. The reason is that not infrequently we interpret the peace of Christ as a superficial peace, and we identify any strife as being unchristian. And that is an extremely superficial understanding. That's why when Jesus says, peace be with you, he doesn't leave it there. He says, my peace I give you. I do not give it to you as the world gives peace. Now, what is the peace of the world? The peace of the world is everything in order for you to be pleased. For me to be pleased. I sometimes like to use these example. Imagine a woman with several children, been taking care of the kids all day and has cleaned the house and then goes out with all her kids, say three or four kids, to the grocery store. And while she's gone, her husband comes home and throws his clothes all over the living room, gets in his shorts and begins to smoke cigars and popcorn and pot potato chips and in general tracks mud all over the house. And then when the wife comes home, she sees this island of destruction and she explodes. And her husband gets up and says, peace. What I want is peace when I get home from work. Now, that example is an example of what is called the peace of the world. It's a silly little example, but it works. It's the peace of when everything is going your way, your status quo, and you want it to remain that way, regardless of how unjust you are to anybody else. That's the peace of the world. What Christ's peace is talking about, and the reason he says, I have come to set the earth on fire. Setting the earth on fire is not a peaceful scene. And he says, do you think I have come to establish peace on earth? I tell you, I have not. And notice how what he is saying goes down to the point of affecting families. From now on, there will be a house divided, a house of five divided, three against two and two against three. And he goes on and on about its effect on families. Now, why is that? Because the peace of the world is based on, like I said, peace with everything according to whoever is dominant. So in this situation, it would have been the father who is dominant and wants everybody to fall in line with him. But on the basis of nations, it can also be that way. It can be a peace where people are oppressed and everybody's okay with it being oppressed as long as it doesn't oppress me. And it could go on and on to different things. And that's why what Jesus was talking about is a necessary corrective for us. Because periodically we mistake, Sometimes I make fun a little bit, and probably I shouldn't, but I make fun of what I call the sweet Jesus. And the sweet Jesus is a Jesus that is very sweet, and you put Jesus in your mouth and he tastes sweet, and he is sweet. But he is also a lion. You know, I have this fantasy of God, you know, because I think a lot of times we think of God as kind of this nice little old man who is in the sky and he watches over the world kind of like a referee in an amusement park or a security guard in an amusement park, watching over and make sure that a good time was had by all. And that is such not what the God that Jesus came to show us. The God that Jesus came to show us is a God, the fantasy that I have is of Jesus as a lion. It's, of course, one of the things that the scriptures call him is the Lion of Judah. Now, I want you to imagine that you go to maybe a circus or something like that, or a zoo, and somebody invites you to get in the cage with a lion. And the lion's in the corner, and he's big male lion with a big mane, and he's sleeping. And the trainer says to you, oh, don't worry, you can go in and pet him. He's a good lion. He's a gentle lion. And so he walks you into the cage, and there you are alone with the lion. And the guy keeps on saying to you, he's a good lion. He's a sweet lion. Let me ask you this question. What would you do? Would you tease the lion? Would you presume that he's a good lion, he won't do anything, so you can pull his mane and you can tease him? No, you wouldn't. You know why? Because you know nobody tames a cat. A cat does what a cat does. Jesus is that lion. I think when I think of gospels like today, the one great example in pretty modern times that comes to me is a man by the name of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. You've probably never heard of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, but you should. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a Lutheran pastor who was active in immediately pre-Second World War II Germany. And when Hitler took over, Hitler began to co-opt, to seduce the Christian churches. Christian churches, all Protestant and Catholics. And Hitler began to, especially in the Lutheran denomination, Hitler began to divide them. And there was a group that said, oh, let's make peace with Hitler, with the Führer. And so they wanted everything nice. They wanted people to have pretty Sunday dresses to go to church. And they wanted everybody enjoying sunny days and just like normal. And they were willing to turn a blind eye to what was going on, to the persecution of Jews and to the persecution of all kinds of different people. But they were happy. And Hitler was making the trains run on time. And Bonhoeffer said, we can't do that. We can't do that. Because he called it something that I've always found very intriguing. He called it cheap grace. Let me read, this is a quote from him. And by the way, let me finish the story on him. He worked to overthrow Hitler, even to the point of cooperating on the assassination of Hitler, which failed. And they found out that he was a member of the resistance, and they put him in prison. And just, I think, 3 or 4 days before the Allies were able to get to him, they walked him out nude in the middle of the winter, and they got him on a scaffold, and they put a wire around his neck. Not a rope, a wire. And then they hung him from that wire, and he hung naked. And all because he refused cheap grace. He belonged to that group of Lutheran pastors who said, we can't allow what's going on. And they resisted it. Listen to what he says about cheap grace. It's a very short paragraph. Cheap grace, this is Bonhoeffer himself, cheap grace is the idea that grace did it all for me, so I don't need to change my lifestyle. The believer who accepts the idea of cheap grace thinks that he can continue living like the rest of the world. Instead of following Christ in a radical way, the Christian, lost in cheap grace, thinks he can simply enjoy all the consolations of life. Cheap grace. There's one more little paragraph that I would like to share with you. This is short. Cheap grace is grace without discipleship, grace without the cross, grace without Jesus. Now, I think that this kind of gospel today is an extremely important one for us, because I've seen too many Christians, when things get tough, what we want without realizing it is cheap grace. We want superficial enjoyment. We want everything to stay the way. We want to be able to go to church and enjoy and do everything that we have, that we enjoy. But that's not what Jesus was talking about. Now please understand, Jesus did say, peace be with you. My peace is my gift to you. What he's talking about is a peace that takes into account justice. A peace, if I can revert to that little silly little story that I gave about the husband and wife. It's a peace of the man who comes home and recognizes how much work his wife has put in for the day. A man who recognizes her contribution and respects it by not getting things dirty and taking it as if it didn't matter. It's a man who respects the other person and doesn't just think about themselves. And when you work that out in justice, then you have a peace that really is the peace of Christ. That's what they're talking, that's what Jesus is talking about. It's a peace with a sense of justice. Without justice, that's the fire that Jesus was coming. You will have strife because you can't shove people down or yourself down or others down without justice. Respecting the rights of other people. And so let me back up here. Let me just communicate one more idea. This has been something that I've been thinking about a lot because of what's going on in politics in the United States right now. You know, and I'm not going to take the Republican or the Democrat side. That's not the issue here. My self-identity is, first of all, at least I try to be a disciple of Jesus, an intentional disciple of Jesus. And what's going on right now is everybody's pointing at everybody else. And some people are right on one side and some people are right on the other side. But the whole point is that both sides are almost sometimes trying to get peace, but their way and their way. And the problem is that if you're a Christian, you know, like I consider myself, as a disciple of Jesus, I don't have a secure home in either political party because my Christianity doesn't fit. Now, it fits better in one than another, but it's not a home because my first identity is not Democrat or Republican. It's disciple of Jesus. And that gets you into trouble. And when you're participating in the dialogue, which is heated right now, the fire is on in the United States and in other parts of the world too. The fire is on. But don't think that just because the fire is on, that means that the Holy Spirit isn't present. Sometimes it's precisely because the fire is on that the Holy Spirit is present. And so as we go through these times, both maybe in your families, or in the politics of the nation, which we're about now, the political scene is starting to rev up for the 2020 election. Just remember, Jesus did come to set a fire. And he came, and we are divided. And it shouldn't surprise us, because it's not peace at any cost. It's peace with justice. And when you're screaming for justice, both sides end up fighting. And where are you going to be? Well, I hope you're going to be, as a disciple of Jesus, thoroughly confused, doing your best to be a disciple of Jesus, and not feeling particularly at home in either party. Probably more than one and then the other. let's grant you that. Because I feel at home, one, more at home than the other. But that's neither here nor there. Jesus has come to light a fire on the earth. We don't belong here. The Christian community is not at home here. Okay? Do you know, by the way, do you know what the word parish means? The word parish is a Greek, comes from the Greek parokia, or parokia. And parokia means a large tent. Notice how we give our churches the name of large tents. And you know why? Because they're not supposed to be permanent. They're homes in the desert as we move through this valley of tears. So, when you see fire, don't despair. Jesus came to bring it. And ask him to help you to be faithful as his disciple in the midst of the fire.